Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
This is our league, and this is your league. Broadcasting from the 55-yard line in Japan to the shores of the Great White North and everywhere around the world on Gridiron America Radio and the Sports History Network.
Everybody, welcome to the latest episode of From the 55-Yard Line. It is Dave, myself, Greg, and it is Fran with us. Fran is back from Atlanta. We're going to talk about in this episode. And today's episode, we're going to do about an hour here of around the leagues, talking minor league sports. And maybe by the end of this, we'll talk a little, I don't know, maybe we might give our picks for the Super Bowl, but I don't know about you guys, but if there's a way for both teams to lose, I'm all for it. Dave?
Well, if I go ahead, Dave.
Oh, sorry, Dave, go ahead.
I will go with the American Football Conference and go Kansas City because of the AFL being from Buffalo. So,
and Fran?
Going old school.
Well, I'm going to go with the 49ers because I can't deal with this Taylor Swift nonsense. The good thing is I made a post on Facebook asking to be invited to a Super Bowl party, and one of my friends is at. So at least, I mean, I'll be distracted by food. I can't drink because I'm going to be driving, but I might play a drinking game where I might do a shot of water every single time Taylor Swift is either mentioned or seen on TV. And I just want to prove a point on how many times that happens. That'll be my fun thing to do during the game for our stats for next week.
I will bet you it's less than three times.
Mm.
I think there's going to be a point made. It's about the game. I think you'll see something pregame. They have 3 hours of pregame.
Wow.
But I think once the game starts, here's a side bet. You'll see, was it Donna Kelce? Was it the mom? You'll see the mom more than you'll see Taylor Swift.
That'll be fun. That'll be fun to discuss whenever. Fun to discuss. Man, looking forward to it, man.
And there's also a wild card in here. I mean, Brittany Mahomes is the new SI swimsuit cover girl. So,
ooh,
a lot of talk about that too.
And if the Chiefs win, we'll have to see if Disney gets on the bandwagon where Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift do a Disney World commercial, and we'll see. Wouldn't prop it if Travis Kelce gets on one knee and proposes to her. And if they lose, we'll see if Taylor Swift goes bond to a tour because my theory that the publicity is over with. We'll find out.
Here's my take, because I've been kind of watching. And actually, there's a Japanese element to this too, because obviously she's got a concert in Tokyo, I think, tonight. Wait a minute. Was it yesterday? I don't know. I'm losing track of days here. It's weird because I live in two times. My clock is set for here and 15 hours behind back in the States, back in Chicago. So I don't know if the concert was, I think the concert was last night. So anyway, my point is I am enjoying all the fake white male outrage about her and everybody on social media. My take on it is, you know, to quote the wife of the late Sonny Werblin, as she said to Joe Namath one time, "Joe, football show business." And that's what it is. So, you know what? More power to them. I mean, if it's going to bring in more fans, the NFL has figured out how to keep a younger fan base. And this is just kind of one thing that fell in their lap that they're milking it for all their worth. Can't blame them for doing that. And to me.
And Greg, a lot of the angry guys are coming from there, single guys there, are still single, and they're bitter because of this whole entire Taylor Swift thing where, I mean, they're appearing that girls never gave them any attention, and now they're just, I'll get, that's Colin Cowherd's theory, and I'll agree with that.
Well, I mean, I just don't get the why all white, you know, it's and a lot of older white dudes too. It's fucking insane. It's like, my take on it is, listen, the world's changing. Either get on board or get left behind. Dave?
It really shows you how few people actually left over at Kaepernick.
Right.
Because it was, I don't know if you guys saw the meme of Taylor Swift going, I thought you guys are worried about me. I thought you all left when Kaepernick took a knee.
You saw it because I posted it.
You did.
That's
okay.
Where you I saw it.
Yeah. Okay. It was the funniest thing. I'm laughing. That is absolutely perfect. That's like a chef's kiss to this whole thing. So you never left football. You just need to be outraged again.
Yeah. Well, before we move on, I'll give one prediction that everyone's going to agree with. This will be the highest rated Super Bowl of all time. Yes or no?
Yes. I think 100%.
Good.
I don't know. You know what? I would have said yes if the Lions were going to be in it. But with the 49ers in it and the Chiefs, I mean, we've seen this. We've seen this before. I don't know. I mean, but then you got the whole,
The Swifty. We'll see if that won't.
Swifties.
Come on. We had the most fun non-Super Bowl discussion without going into the game. Now let's go on to more fun stuff. And
if the Lions, I tell you what, if the Lions would have been in it, there'd be a lot more talk about the football side of it. So,
thank God. I wish. I'd be into the game. I'm glad I'm not watching at home. Otherwise,
the game comes on early in the morning here. Mm. My wife's actually going to get up with it so she can watch the whole thing. And she's like, aren't you excited? I go, the Lions aren't in it. So, I'm going to watch again. I'm an American. Got to watch Super Bowl.
Everybody has to watch it. And the commercials.
It's required. It's like watching baseball here in Japan. When Japan is playing internationally, the whole country actually, and Dave, you remember last year when we were sitting doing a podcast?
Yep.
When Japan won the, you and I were sitting doing one of our podcasts, and that was when Japan was playing the US, and it was, Shohei Ohtani struck out Mike Trout. I'm like, baseball is much, much bigger here than football is in America. And it's really hard for people to understand that. But on that day, I would say about 100% of the population was tuned in either on television, radio, or if they were working, people were checking their phones. It's phenomenal. So,
and we will find out we'll have to vote for the three of us, which is the best Super Bowl commercial. You'll find out down the road with us. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. I haven't seen any of the previews. My hope
me either. We'll be surprised. We'll find out.
They're awesome.
Mm.
I said to you guys, I did that USA Today link every year. I watch the ad meter, so I watch them all ahead of time and rate them.
Really?
They've outdone themselves. I sent you guys a link through USA Today.
I'd rather be surprised. I don't need to know what's going on beforehand. I'll just be surprised.
I got one question though with the commercials.
Mm-hmm.
Does Progressive have a commercial?
You have to watch and find out.
Damn.
And I mean, also, David, one more thing. Isn't it the three Taylor Swift theme commercials? That's what I heard. Is that true, David?
No. They're
thank God. Okay.
What they're doing is they're getting a lot of brands who are looking to target the Swifty crowd. So you're gonna see younger brands, more people taking, more people taking risks. I think, I think they're better than ever. I tell you, I love them just as much as I like watching the game. My wife's working Sunday night. The kids go to bed around 7:30. So I'll miss maybe the first quarter, but I'll be able to watch the rest of the game just myself. It'll be wonderful.
No, it's going to be it's the second Super Bowl I've watched early in the morning. So I just want it to be a good game. I hope the Chiefs lose. If I got to pick a team, I want the Chiefs to lose. And But then again, I'm not a 49er fan either. So it's like, yeah, if there was a way for both teams to lose, it'd be awesome.
Well, I'm suffering Jets fans, so I don't care about either team. So, ugh.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
You got it.
That's a whole show unto itself. Jets fans.
Brandon, you missed the 5 seconds Aaron Rodgers. That's, you know, come on. I'd rather talk about not stuff we hate. Let's go on.
Fran, you're an AFL guy. You got to go Chiefs. If you're a Jets fan.
Well, okay. Well, I just want a good game. I mean, go Chiefs. I mean, let's go Disney and Disney commercial. Let's see marriage proposals. Let's see Lifetime movies. Come on. Let's milk this for every dollar it's worth. Come on. It's going to go on and on. Ticket tape parades.
We're going to have to have Jason Kelce shirtless chugging beer at some point in this Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
You can't let that go.
All right. Well, yeah. I mean, I'm tired of the Chiefs winning. At least let's give it to the no name Mr. Irrelevant. Let him win a game and then make a fortune on his next deal, bankrupt the 49ers, and then they'll suck for years like every team does when they pay their quarterback. You're right here first.
I sat through 20 years of the Patriots. I'm okay with 5 to 10 years of the Chiefs as long as it's not the Patriots.
I agree. All right.
All right. All right. Well, on that note, hey Fran, let's talk about your latest article with Around the Leagues. Tell us what is going on in the world of minor league sports.
We're going to start off with a fun topic for you guys to enjoy, and we're going to start off with here we go the NBA all time 3-point leader Golden State Warriors guard Steph Curry and WNBA single season 3-point record holder New York Liberty guard Sabrina Ionescu will compete in the Steven versus Sabrina first ever WNBA NBA 3-point challenge that will take place next Saturday. We'll have some fun at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis, sort of all-star Saturday night. Steven versus Sabrina will follow the, I'm not going to mention the sponsorship, 3-point shooting contest. Curry will shoot the NBA 3-point line basketballs, and Ionescu will shoot the WNBA 3-point lines. And then we'll see what happens. But what do you guys think? Is it fun? Is it compelling? Is it going to be better than the slam dunk contest? Is it the best thing of All-Star Saturday night? Guys, what do you think?
Dave?
I'm excited. I will watch it. I think it's going to be fun. It's going to be different. I think a lot of these all-star weekends are dull. They're not what they, I'm not saying the way they used to be. I don't mean it that way, but you don't have, I mean, it's such a cliche. 20 years ago, all the top guys would be in the 3-point contest and all the top guys would be the dunk contest. Now, this is their way for leagues to expose you to up and coming stars or good players, but I like it. I think it's going to be compelling.
David, one question. Did you guys watch the Ionescu's 3-point shooting last year? That was off the hook. It's on my video. Check it out, fans, when you want to go to R Sports Central. That shooting, 37 points was insane. That's what set up this thing. So,
well, is this more kind of like another, you know, for lack of better, you know, for historical
battle
comparison?
Sexes? Battle of Sexes.
Yeah, Battle of Sexes.
Billie Jean King. That's the person I interviewed. Yeah, of course. Well, on a more fun level. I mean, there's no women's rights things involved in this nonsense. I mean, Steve Carell being involved in this nonsense when he was involved in that movie. So it'll be fun to watch, entertaining. And the thing is, if you don't watch it, you'll still be able to see it on YouTube. So that's the place to get your stuff. It'll be fun, entertaining. And I'll watch it. I'll DVR it and enjoy it. Whenever, if I'm home Saturday, I'll watch it. That'll probably be the best thing of the night. The 3-point shooting stuff for the NBA stuff is fun. The slam dunk is hit or miss. It could be good. It could suck. We'll find out.
Okay. And next up, we got the G League. What's going on with the G League?
Well, we'll discuss one topic briefly. With Memphis Hustle, the guy who won his 100th game, Jason March, congrats to him. But G League is developing well. But one thing I'll discuss briefly, what's your take about the Phoenix Suns being the only team in the NBA not to have a G League team. Do they need one? I mean, it's about time they get one. What's your take on that?
Dave, I defer to you on this one.
Honestly, I don't have an issue with if they don't. If they don't have 14 players or 18 players that they need, they probably have two or three tucked around where they need them, and with expanded rosters of 14, 15 players. I mean, honestly, you're only playing, if you're looking at the box score, eight players a night. So to have 32 players under contract, I can see why they don't.
I think they did have Northern Arizona team. I think they once they get the right market, they will, because they definitely will eventually. They're probably waiting. And the thing is with these minor league teams, the problem, it goes two ways, David. I mean, either you have to win or you want to develop talent. And some of these leagues, I mean, all they care about is developing talent, and then the fan experience is terrible. So I feel you got to do a combination of both.
Go ahead, Dan. I'm sorry. So here's my take on just the team in Phoenix. Okay. Just, you know, I don't know how much time you guys have spent out in Arizona and in Phoenix. I've spent, you know, last five years of my Navy career was spent out, you know, on a monthly basis out there. You've got the whole Phoenix region. So that's obviously the Suns territory. It's a huge region. But the problem is, at least in my opinion, that, okay, so where are you going to put the team? Is the team going to be profitable? The only other major city in Arizona besides the Phoenix metro area is Tucson. And Tucson, I mean, I don't think they have a place where they can really put a team and for it to be bottom line wise successful or worth the cost. So that's just my take. I mean, maybe there are other things to factor in, but putting a team in Tucson, you know what? I don't know. I mean, Tucson's an awesome place. If I were to play basketball, I'd want to be living it. It's beautiful. It's actually cooler than Phoenix, but.
Well, the thing is, Greg, there will be a team. Eventually they're going to put a team. We'll just figure out where it is. And when it is, it'll be discussed on the show.
Okay. And moving on here, let's talk a little UFL.
We're going to go to United Football League. We're not going to talk about some schedule that we'll talk about the Houston Roughnecks. They will play at the iconic Rice Stadium on the campus of Rice University. Rice Stadium will be a great home for the Roughnecks, and we can't wait to deliver a phenomenal football product with the fan experience in the H-Town, says Ross Brandon. I'm glad he's involved running the UFL, not some other guy. Rice Stadium has served as home field of the Rice Owls since it opened in 1950, and a rich history of pressure football as well. The Houston Oilers played their home games on the campus from 1966 to 1968, and 6 years later, the stadium hosted, I think one of you guys were alive for it, Super Bowl VIII between the Miami Dolphins and the Minnesota Vikings, becoming one of the only four conference venues to host the NFL championship game. The facility also served as a practice facility for the Atlanta Falcons before Super Bowl 2017. What you guys think about all this information? Houston playing in Rice, is the team developed? Is it going to be worse than what they played last year? And how many years are they going to be stuck in Rice? Dave, what do you think?
I think that's their only option.
Yeah, but definitely, yep.
Yeah, I think they're going to be there. I mean, it's okay, I guess. I mean, looking at the fact that this is the option that they have, I mean, it's okay. I mean,
They can't play with Texas play. No, because Texas will want millions of dollars, and they're not going to give the UFL a bone. Never.
No, but, I mean, it's one of those things where there's – the capacity is big, but it's still manageable. And obviously being a predominantly a college stadium, they're probably getting it for a good rate. And that's the bottom line with all this stuff is the dates you need at an attractive and affordable price. And hopefully
get the college kids to come to the games. Give, you know, that's a, if you're going to use that stadium, the thing is, my question is, when's the last time this thing's been renovated? This thing's almost, 75, 80 years old? Well, that's find out. Yep.
Well, I mean, my take on it is...
It opened in 1950, so it's not a new stadium.
It's just a stadium that keeps on going, and Rice will never get their own football stadium ever again. This is their baby for centuries.
Well, also, too, I mean, like I said, they... Honestly, I wouldn't be. The question I have is, they could have played in Jepson Stadium too, the old Jepson Stadium.
What's that?
That's where the Houston Oilers first played. That's a high school field. And they played the first AFL championship there. If I'm remembering my AFL history correct, Dave, am I wrong? Am I off? Or
they played it in Houston.
I
literally just watched that AFL video last week.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, they definitely played in Houston. I'm just trying to think.
Yeah, they played. They played there from. I've got, you know, I hate even going to Wikipedia sometimes, but yeah, they played there. The Oilers played there from 60 to 64, before they moved into Rice Stadium. It seats actually. Let's see here.
32. Right now, looks like 32,000.
Yeah. So that
was
my take on it on the Houston team. The Roughnecks / Gamblers, because it's kind of a hybrid team anyway.
Yep.
They're playing here. They're going to play it at Rice Stadium. And then next year, let's just see if even the UFL is even around, if we're going to have a discussion about, because, you know, if history is any guide, there's a good chance none of these teams will be playing next year. So they're only going to playing five home games anyway. So, the question is, and I'm not familiar with the Houston area, never been there, but where is Rice University located? Is it easy to get to? I mean, those are all the things that factor into these stadiums and attendance and everything. So,
well, my question for you guys, I'll let you guys make what type of give like an average attention thing they're going to get for these games. I think it might be a little bit lower than because it's Rice Stadium's issue. I hope I'm wrong, but what do you think they're going to get their first game in Rice Stadium?
I'm going under 10.
Me too. And fans will be crying about it on social media because they complain about everything.
I'll go 25.
Okay. Ooh. I'll send you a beer if that happens, man. Come on.
No. But
I'll get Amazon Prime, but I'll send you a beer. Come on.
Okay. No, I think people are going to be people are going to be surprised at the start.
So that means this league's going to do something besides they're going to actually do marketing. They're going to. I mean, I see some marketing. Are they really going to go marketing? Are they going to go team presence marketing? We shall see.
Well, it comes down to we have an idea of what the XFL lost.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously the USFL didn't close, so they're into year three now of what their economic model was. So I think there's going to be a pretty big financial push to get over the hump this year. I think you will be surprised at the amount of focus on football that this league is going to have.
And David, one question for you, David, how much is this involved free tickets being given away? You worked in teams. How many free tickets are going to be given to make it look better than it is? What do you think?
There'll be a combination of things. There always are. Like you can. Here's an example. You have your sponsors, and it's how you honestly. It's how you put them into your how they are accounted for in your financial side.
And part of it is they get tickets to the game. I know that. I've seen that. Well, I run sponsors at these games.
Well, and that's some of that too. It's like if you have a Lexus dealer and they're the preferred car dealership, they might get 100 tickets for a game. So how do you equate that? Yeah, there'll be a combination. They'll be doing. Hopefully, group sales is going and they're doing some things. But it won't be some random guy standing at a corner with 1,000 tickets just handing them out.
Good.
There's ways to target. I mean, they have mailing lists. Both teams, the Gamblers and the Roughnecks, when they were going, have extensive social media and marketing and hopefully email and contacts that your group sales, you're plugging away, you're inviting people out. Of course there's going to be more complimentary tickets for this first game than you might do for a second game or a third game because you're looking for a pop. But it's a pop with hopefully a positive end on the back end of this where the bottom line is a crowd attracts a crowd. And if you put the work in, you get a good first week crowd and the game's entertaining, you're going to see it. You're going to see it week two. You're going to see week three. But if you roll in like Orlando did or Las Vegas did, you're just going to be swimming upstream the entire year.
Oh, yeah. Good point. And also, too, before we continue on, I stand corrected. Old Jepson Stadium is now the Houston, where the University of Houston plays. So obviously, I was, you know, they're not using that stadium. They're not going to be using that stadium. I was thinking Stadium was a completely entirely separate stadium, but Jepson Stadium was torn down to make room for the current University of Houston Stadium.
Why does that say, Greg, about you? Even Babe Ruth strikes out every once in a while. We'll move on to a topic you guys are going to love. In the CFL, baby, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers announced the club has agreed to a one-year contract with, wait for it, Chris Treveler. 29 years old, returns to the Blue Bombers after spending 4 years in the NFL, suiting up 9 regular season games and during those days with the Arizona Cardinals and New York Jets. But good news, he got a pension. Treveler also spent brief stints with the Baltimore Ravens and the Miami Dolphins. Treveler first signed with the Blue Bombers in 2018, and following the sudden retirement of Derek Durant and injury to Matt Nichols near the end of camp, that made him the first ever straight from college quarterback to start from week one CFL since Anthony Calvillo and the Las Vegas Posse's. That we'll see how long that's a crazy team we can talk about in another show. For the Blue Bombers since John Schneider in 1968. So what do you think about Chris Treveler coming back? Is he going to get a chance to play? Will he be starting? I mean, CFL quarterbacks get killed in this league. What do you think? Is he going to play as well as he did? What do you think, guys?
He's going to – well, let me field this one, because as I was looking up Streveler, and I've watched the guy play for years, I did not realize he is from my home. He's from my home area and played up at Marion Central Catholic up in Woodstock. You know, Chris Streveler, he's a great third down in the CFL. He's a great third and one quarterback. That's bottom line. I mean, and that's what he's going to be. He'll always be, he's a running back. That's really all he, to me, that's all he's ever done.
Yeah, but he can throw the football. I mean, he helped win great cups. The guy can do more. The guy can contribute to, I mean, the rollouts. He can actually help the team. And I think, there's no guarantee the quarterback's going to even last. Well, so I think he's going to be involved. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, he can throw the football. Let's just, to get to this level, yeah, you've got to be able to throw the football. But in the CFL system, he has made his name, a name for himself, as a third down, as a fullback. Really, that's what he is. He is the guy that get on third and one or third and two, or give the ball to him to punch it through. To punch it through to pick up the first down. That's what he's known for. I mean, the one game he remember him playing for the Cardinals, and I'm a huge Cardinals fan. So when he got the starting nod, to me, it was quite a, you know, I was happy for it, because I'm like, okay, let's see what he can do. And he didn't, maybe it's just, I mean, he's been, let's take a look here. He's been with the Blue
Bombers. Well, Craig, when you get a chance, Google Boomer Esiason's comments on the CFL. People went crazy on that.
Well, I remember that, but my point is here. So he's with the Blue Bombers from 18 to 19, went to the Cardinals for 2 years, really never saw the field except once. The Ravens, the Dolphins, the Jets, and now he hasn't done anything. What Chris Streveler is known for is taking his shirt off during a Grey Cup parade. That's what people remember him for. Now, is he a good quarterback? You know what? To get to the pro level, you got to be able to sling the ball. But the problem is he's never been in a position where he's been able to show off his skills. And when he got the starting nod for the Cardinals, you know, it's the Cardinals. I mean, he did a serviceable job, but he just hasn't given, to at least in my opinion, he's not been given an opportunity to really show what he can do. Going back to Winnipeg just seems to me like, okay, he's going to go back and do what he did. And I like the guy. I'm a fan of his. But I don't recall him ever making a play with his arm. So we'll see. But, you know, with the CFL, you'd never know. And the way they go through quarterbacks in a season, he's going to get a chance this year to actually, I think, hopefully show his stuff. But if that happens, then that is, you know, that doesn't, to me, that doesn't bode well for the Winnipeg team, because that means they're going to be struggling, and I doubt they're going to make it, you know, to a fifth straight Grey Cup. So that's just my take. So I'm happy to see him back still playing football, but I've only seen him play as a running back and as a fullback, and that's really it. So
Greg, I'm happy with that analysis. I mean, Dave, if you have anything to chime in, otherwise we'll move on to the next topic.
Well, I'll chime in, but I think you can cover this next week. I think there were two signings that occurred in the last couple of days that are bigger than Stevler at the end of the day, with Boris Beattie and AJ Ouellette. The slowly dismantling of the Argos as they're rolling through this off season. So,
we kind of knew that was going to happen. They signed all these big names. They got their title. So it's just kind of the natural progression of things.
It is, but it's still like I wasn't surprised by Beattie. They signed the kicker already. So it seemed like that was a plan, but I was a little surprised by Ouellette going to the Rough Riders, to be completely honest. I honestly didn't see that one coming. I honestly, you're always losing players every season, losing something. But I'll be honest, I didn't see that one coming. I thought he put himself in the very good position to be a huge part of that offense for years to come. He's only 28. It's not like he's old.
Right. But
that's all I had. But again, CFL's coming. Looking forward to it.
And I'm looking forward to chiming in with you guys. And I'm hoping CBS Sports Network actually does more games, and they don't hide everything on the app that people don't really want to go out of their way to follow it.
Before we move on here, let's give me a little side note here. Talking about CBS Sportsnet and watching the CFL on TV. Yeah. For people who are out there, don't waste your money on CBS Sportsnet or picking up an extra cable package. Mm-hmm. Buy yourself, get a VPN. And with a VPN, change your country to whatever country you want outside of the United States and Canada, and watch it online for free, because that's how I watch the CFL. And if you're tech savvy enough, there's a way to cast the games from your phone to your smart TV. And, you know, people are interested and listening that want to know how to do that, feel free to message us at our message. You can message us, but I'm kind of in control of the Twitter account. Message us at From the 55. We'll talk. I'll try to work it through with you. And because I know the messaging works, because obviously we got some mail this week. We'll just leave it at that, from a certain news hub type UFL media outlet. And I'm just going to leave it at that. So, feel free to reach out to me on the technical side to how to set up a VPN. It's really straightforward. I think I got Dave hooked up here, but don't waste your money on cable or CBS Sportsnet. If, you know, and same with you, Fran, too. If you don't know how to do it, we'll talk offline and I'll get you set up, because the VPN is how I watch American sports over here. So anyway, enough said.
I'm doing on Twitter that if you listen to the show, you're going to save some money. That people will be listening gaga with the stuff. Come on. That'll be people actually listen to podcasts where you save money on watching sports. Come on, man. That's every sports fan's dream, especially the people that listen to our show, because basically they love sports and they don't really have much of a life outside of it.
Well, the hard part of watching sports is it's becoming, you got to be a little tech savvy to find your teams now, too. I mean, just straightforward with apps and everything. If everything were on YouTube, life would be good, but it's not. And I know the UFL. In fact, I was reading through your article about the TV stuff for the UFL, that all the Fox games are going to be on the Fox Sports app. Okay, well, that's a conversation that I'm going to have with the three of you offline as to how I'm going to access the Fox Sports app. But we'll talk later. So, but anyway, moving on to the Arena Football League.
And this is one where Sam Shady's going to love this topic because he loves this league. But when, and if he listens to the show, we're going to get some more angry hate mail. Marking the national return to arenas across the country, AFL begins a new chapter as a league. Minnesota will be front and center with a brand new team, mission and organization, the Minnesota Myth. Yeah, the league's been a myth so far. We'll kick off season one against Nashville Cats and week two hosting the Philadelphia Soul. The Myth season will consist of 10 games, 5 away, 5 home. Wow. An iconic, wait for it, Target Center, home of the NBA Minnesota Timberwolves and WNBA Minnesota Lynx. Regular season games will be played Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Hey, man, Minnesota's back in the I would go with Fighting Pike, but hey, man, they didn't want to spend money on the trademark. Is it going to work? Is Arena Football going to work in Minnesota? Is anyone even care about this league besides one person? And what do you guys think?
Dave?
I'm in. They're in major. I love it. I think it's great. More?
Okay, well, I want to see you write an article about it. There's nothing out there, Dave.
Fran?
Yeah.
The more teams means the more players getting paid. Means good. More staff getting jobs. Good. Means more arenas being used in communities. Good. Means more concession workers are getting hired. More food is being eaten.
Yes.
You know what? The big thing was when the AFL went away, all the people in the indoor arena football crowd going, if the Arena Football League comes back, they need to be in big cities. They need to be in big arenas and no more of this podunk towns and small things that arena football is. So it took a while. The Myth are going to take on the financial burden of playing in the Target Center. Good for them. That's the way I look at it. It's like they're doing what everybody has said that teams need to do to be taken seriously. So now they're in a major city. They're playing in the biggest facility in town. Now they're looking for the fans to come and support them.
And so, Ricky Foggy's coaching the team, the local Minnesota boy.
Exactly. I think this is when you try to draw it up, it's perfect on what you want. Now, has the league made missteps getting to this point? Of course. Of course they have. I'm not going to disagree with that, but I will give all three of these leagues, four of these leagues, the benefit of the doubt that they're trying to put the best product forward because they're trying to get people and sponsors to come on board with this. So are there going to be some issues? There probably will be. There isn't the IFL. There isn't the NAL. All these leagues are going to have their issues because they don't have unlimited pockets. They have a finite amount of money that they're willing to spend and how they're going to use it.
And a lot of them operate on a shoestring.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting just talking about this. The other day I was listening when I was at the gym on the treadmill, listening to an older episode of Good Seats Still Available from the end of the year, where Tim sat down with Paul Reese and a couple other guys and talked about
my boss.
Yeah. And actually it was a great discussion. I've been kind of casually following what's going on with the Arena Football League. None of it, obviously none of the news has been, how should I say, encouraging.
Earth shattering,
but even encouraging as to, you know, where this is going to go. So yeah, I'm in with it. I'm going to watch it. If I can watch it here, hopefully I'll probably tune in more to the indoor football league because their games are on YouTube. But if but if the Arena Football League is able to deliver on the promises that they've been making, yeah, and apparently they're planning on playing their first game. Correct me if I'm wrong. Right when the NFL draft ends. So, yeah, we'll see. I will see. The jury's out on a lot of things about spring football. But one thing we know, indoor football, whether it's the AFL, the IFL, I mean, these leagues have been around for a long time, and I got a feeling that they're going to continue for a long time. So, Fran, go ahead. I apologize.
I was just going to ask you guys, maybe David knows, maybe you know, what's the mystery TV parties? I heard Amazon Prime, NFL Network. Do you guys know anything? I mean, I haven't heard anything from Sam Shady yet, so I don't know. I mean, his expert on what TV network is going to be covering this league yet. I haven't seen anything confirmed. I've heard rumors, nothing confirmed. I
haven't seen anything.
So,
well, and here's the thing. It's not going to be, I mean, it's not going to be a major network. So that's, you'd have to have that out 8 months in advance. That's why the XFL had such horrible times. So obviously it's going to be some kind of streaming, or it's going to be some kind of cable network that's going to be able that, that is able to move around programming, or they would have to have time slots done 6, 8, 10 months in advance.
NFL Network? So,
I mean, I heard they're doing, are they doing, I heard like a Thursday night game or something. There's like a game of the week game every week on NFL Network. I heard
possibly.
Something I thought.
Possibly.
But the thing is, here's a great example. If that NFL Network deal comes to fruition, that has to be a humongous feather in their cap. The
great
NFL
exposure, and we can get ratings. We can talk about ratings on the show. That's nice for change.
But I mean, even I don't know how many people get the NFL Network. I'll be honest, I don't get the NFL Network.
I do.
Really?
I do. Haha.
I can watch it on my phone. But the thing is, it's one of those things where I think they're gonna have a couple different places, and I like the idea of monetizing and utilizing YouTube. I think the NAL and the IFL did a really good job of that. I think the IFL announced they got a 3-year deal to have their championship game on CBS Sports Network, but as we talked about with the USFL and the CFL, I'm not sure how great that is. Like
I watched it last year. I mean Vegas is weird.
Not,
in Vegas.
Not the game. The being on that network, not the game itself. I watched that. I saw, but I'm being, it's a hard network to get.
But unfortunately, Dave, everybody, the USL Championship, USL League One, and I don't know what these USL Super League is doing, but that's the discussion down the road. But they're sanctioned. They're going to be big time. We'll see what networks come on their way, like with the NWSL. But we'll see that for another show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, listen, guys, real quickly, Fran, tell us what's happening in the world of hockey, and let's talk about your trip to Atlanta as we're approaching the end.
We'll skip on Savannah Ghost Pirates. Well, let's go on to, let's see what else. Let me go down 1 second here. Let's PWHL 303 that was entertaining. Let's go to a topic. I'm gonna 1 second here. 1 second. Lionel Messi. We'll talk about that next year. Let's talk about a topic. I'm curious what you guys think about it. Brooklyn Football Club announced a multi-year agreement to play its home games at Mayanamis Park, the longtime home of New York Mets minor league affiliate, the Brooklyn Cyclones. The news coincides with the Brooklyn Football Club USL League agreeing to USL Championship to the highest level beginning 2025. Oh. So, what's your guys' take on this? I mean, Brooklyn gets a team. They're probably in USL League One. I see him moving up the USL League Championship. Brooklyn's a good market. They're playing where Cyclones play. I mean, baseball stadium with soccer. David, what do you think? I mean, many teams do it.
I worked for the arguably the seventh most successful professional soccer team in the mid-90s that played at a baseball stadium in Rochester, New York. We outdrew 4 or 5 MLS teams at the time. So it happens. I know they don't like it. I don't think there'll be a long-term solution, but it'll get them off the ground. And if baseball is truly not coming back there, there's going to be some money that needs to be spent to tailor that field to the size. That's going to be the biggest issue, is it's going to be small. It's going to be narrow. It's going to be noticeable. It's probably going to be probably about 15 feet narrower and about 25 yards shorter. So it's going to be tiny, because that's what baseball stadiums do. But if they have the money, they'll see if they can get the crowds. There'll be some money that need to be spent. And if it does well, they'll need to build something bigger. Bottom line.
Well, also another breaking story. The Brooklyn team has a USL Super League team as well. I'm hoping the Charlotte team, I'm hoping the first matchup is Brooklyn, because I get my Brooklyn tie being from Brooklyn. If not, I'm probably going to go to a Charlotte home opener and a game against Brooklyn. I have to give Brooklyn some love, finally covering a game, Bar Sports Central in 23 years. So that'll be fun. And as far as them, though, I see them moving up the USL Championship after they get the established fan base, and I can cover North Carolina FC games against Brooklyn. That'd be fun down the road.
And my take on it is, since any game I watch is going to be on TV, I like the aesthetics of a soccer field and a baseball park. Same way with football. I grew up on that. So, but yeah, you know, I agree with Dave, man. You know, you got, if you got a stadium, I mean, it's, you got to use it. So if not, and so the Brooklyn minor league team, are they going away?
No, the same. The baseball team.
Cyclones. No. Are the Cyclones gone away?
They're staying. They're in the South Atlantic League. They're sharing the facility with those two soccer teams.
Okay, gotcha. Okay,
and,
all right.
And one brief topic: Brooklyn Nets. I mean, should they have changed their name or should they have rebranded? I thought they should have rebranded with that. What do you? What's briefly? What do you think? When the Nets came to Brooklyn, I thought they should have rebranded to something new and original. But teams don't want to spend that money.
Keep the Nets. It's a brand. It's Dr. J. It's the Nets. Yeah. I'm fine with it. I mean, I think there's a strong history with that. I think sometimes we get the urge to change for the sake of change, and I think that's a wrong direction as well. I mean,
well, Minneapolis Lakers, LA Lakers, remember that? I mean, the Lakers meant nothing in LA, but they kept that name and that worked.
Yeah, but you know, the Minneapolis Lakers going to LA. I mean, LA is part of your team, so it's the LA Lakers. I mean, that's to me that was. Again, that was actually before all our time when they made that move. So, but when you look at name changes, I mean, the Brooklyn Nets have always, I mean, they were the New York Nets. They've always been part of New York. So changing the team name to Brooklyn and keeping it wasn't, you know, it's, I'm happy to see they brought, there's, you know, I remember when the Brooklyn Nets changed their name, but I didn't know about it. And I was watching TV, I heard some Brooklyn. Like, wait a minute, what? Are we, you know, what did I miss? And then I saw, wow, okay. So it's cool that we have a team, a New York team called Brooklyn for the, you know, and they've been that way for a while. So, you know, it would have been interesting had your Jets decided to, you know, build a stadium in Brooklyn, would they have been known as the Brooklyn Jets? That would have been.
I would have loved the Jets. I hate the Giants just sharing a stadium, but I mean, as far as like that Brooklyn arena is, it's in downtown. It looks so awful down there. I've been down there. It's not the safest of areas, and I mean the thing is, the Islanders had to deal with that nonsense for years. Yeah. That's, I mean, I'm glad they have their own thing now too. But let's
one last question for Fran.
Yep.
Should the Dodgers have changed their name when they moved to Los Angeles?
I guess. Well, come on. That back then. Based on what they've done now. Nah. Let's just be lazy. Let's just be lazy. I mean,
team rebranding is very tricky.
Oh yes,
it really is. And
it is. You know, unless it's defensive, you can't. Nobody changes it anymore.
Well, the rebranding, obviously, the Commanders and the Eskimos,
and Guardians
by outside
Indians.
It was in the in Cleveland was outside forces. And people got upset because of that. Now, again, this is just my take, but the people that were upset about these name changes were old white guys. I think the vast majority of people, listen, you're rooting for laundry, ultimately. You're rooting for a logo. Team rebranding, you don't lose fans. I think you actually gain fans when a team rebrands over time. And those guys that are saying, I'm never going to go to this and that. Well, we're going to be talking to Superfan Mike from the Turf District podcast this year. So we'll have him, you know, we'll have a more in-depth discussion with him about the whole rebrand. Cause I haven't talked to Mike since, well, it's been a while and since the rebrand. So, but did the rebrand not cause the Edmonton Elks to basically suck as a football team.
Did the attendance drop?
The attendance dropped.
Because they're awful.
Because they're awful.
That's good.
They didn't win a game. Like, they went 18 in a row at home. Like, that's why people didn't go. It had nothing to do with
the name change. That's good.
Absolutely not. Good. Nope.
No. People get upset about a name change. Again, it goes back to what I said. Old white guys getting all pissed off on social media, got nothing to do. I'm never going to go to this and that. You know, dude, it's, you know, again, the players don't care. The players could give a shit. They just want to play and get paid.
Yeah.
So the only people that are getting upset about a name change are guys sitting around the house like me, you know, I don't get upset, but my point is that I'm an old white guy sitting in a man cave here. those are the people that get upset. Now, I think, you know, when it comes to name changes, there have been some good ones, some bad ones. What really kind of gets me going are the uniform changes.
Mm.
Like, dude,
enough.
Those are horrible. That to me is the bigger issue, but that's a whole nother subject. So anyway, Fran, moving on here. Let's talk about your trip to Atlanta.
I gotta say, guys, it was probably one of the most amazing, unexpected trips I ever did in my life. I got the vacation experience. I got the sports media clobberings for you. Paul changed the name to that. I'm like, I knew he wasn't going to use that one, the name. But and then I got some blessed from the past friend encounters. One resulted in me having now, wait for it, an iPhone 12 Pro. I went for iPhone 8. So that's kind of cool. I mean, our son had the 15. I got a hand-me-down. Now I have a phone where I can Zoom with you guys anytime I want. But let's it was fun. I mean, it was fun from all levels, covering non-football leagues. Wow, Grant covers non-football. Yes, he does. But it was fun. I mean, we'll first start with the Pro Bowl Federation game. That was kind of cool, where like the day before, I'm like, they had this mystery news. I'm like, the mystery investor, what's going on? Is it some politician? Please no. But it was Paul Millsap. That was kind of interesting. What's your guys' take on Paul Millsap, a local Atlanta guy being involved with his team? And it gave the team a little extra exposure.
I love it. I think more outreach needs to be done with all minor league teams with established stars in their community, because a lot of these guys are staying. I think it's great. I think it's you're getting that cross brand from the player where they're playing now, and then that financial support and stability you need to influx that organization with money.
Yep, I agree.
And just for people curious, to take a price range that the Atlanta buy frame from $12 to the four season volleyball. Come on, $116. You basically can touch the players that price. So I don't want people complaining about that. And another fun thing we'll talk about, but indoor arena football, when the ball is going sand, you can keep them. But the Football Federation, Dave, volleyball is going sand, they must be returned. Is that fair game in a league that they want to make sure they stay on budget?
I mean, I think that's fine. I mean, that's part of the mystique of the arena football. They positioned that years ago. That was their drawing card. So I have no problem. I mean, there's only so many volleyballs that, I mean, I don't know.
A volleyball is more apt to get bounced in the stands anyway, the way that ball's bouncing around.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense. Yeah.
You're going to give them, what, 50 volleyballs a game? Like, every time there's a spike or a block, a big time block or a big time spike, that ball's in the crowd, you'll go bankrupt just supplying balls for people.
Yeah.
As far as the crowd at 6,100 fans, but one of these people was amazing. I'm just walking around being friendly. My media seat wasn't the best in the world, but the thing was, I was just so happy to be at that first ever game. I mean, I'm talking to one fan, and he was wearing a Georgia Swarm cap. I'm having a friendly conversation with him. It turned out to be, wait for it, Georgia Swarm forward Shane Jackson, 2020 NL MVP. That cut. He had in 12 games, he had 31 goals and 42 assists. I'm like, obviously, I had a friendly conversation. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm covering the game for Arms Sports Central. Are you covering the game, the Swarm game tomorrow? Of course I am. It's like, who are you? I'm like, and then I look at the stats. I'm like, I spoke to a 2020 NL MVP. My jaw dropped. That was one of the most amazing moments in my sports writing for Sports Central. Just running to a player like that, just being friendly.
How was the attendance overall? You went to how many games?
I went to three games.
Which games did you go to?
The first game I went had 6,100 fans, which was good.
Which game was that?
That was the Pro Bowl game, and Dave, you watched the game. What's your take on that briefly?
That was exciting. I thought it was a great production. Like I said, I'm very impressed. I enjoy it. I hope it is able to sustain. But from what they're doing so far, it's a great broadcast. It's entertaining. I'm in. I like it.
And what's your take on that? One thing I loved was the ATL chance of the Bowl. I don't know who came up with that or whoever did that deserves a. Marketing executive of the year award. I mean, that was amazing. A T ATL. And I mean, the game tonight I was watching some of ATL chance. That stuff is off the hook. No other team does that in this league.
And who else? Who'd you see the next night?
The next night, we're going to go to the National Lacrosse League, the Georgia Swarm. And that was kind of fun, where ticket prices range from $12 to $61. That was so much fun, where I get a press pass. I'm like, where am I going to be going? I'm like, they gave me a press pass, and he said, oh, you can walk anywhere you want around the arena. I'm like, okay. So I made the most of it. Another media person would have sat in one seat the entire time and just, no, I ran around the arena all over the place. It was so much fun.
Where was the game at?
Yeah, South Arena, same arena as all three of these teams.
Okay.
The same arena.
Okay. All right.
Yep.
Okay. And yeah, so, how was the attendance for that game?
Well, this game, I'll tell you right now. Here we go. 6,957 fans.
Yep. Oh, wow. Wow.
12-11 overtime game. The game was off the hook. It was, I mean, the National Lacrosse League games, I didn't realize how good they were in person. If that's the case, I would have gone to more games earlier. I mean, I basically ran around the arena, got close to the goal of action. And the thing is, the sports music was iconic. The Bulls music, that music is so iconic, the entry. All this sports team music, the play on the field, the action. And then, like, during, like, the fourth quarter, they had, like, the concert with the Sweet Caroline stuff. I mean, that was amazing, where they just had that everyone had the cameras out. I mean, I'm from Raleigh, so I love that moment. And then, and then the game went into overtime, and they won. The public address announcer got the team all pumped up. I gave him a nice little mention in my story, and he thanked me for it, so that was kind of cool. But it was fun.
And then the last game you went to?
The last game will go to the ECHL game. Atlanta Gladiators game, and what became intriguing to that was the rumor of the Atlanta wanting an NHL team. Before we get into that, what do you think, guys? Think will Atlanta get one, or is NHL not even going to expand?
No, Atlanta's not going to get one. They failed twice. But you think
money talks?
You think it might happen?
I think whoever comes up, whatever number the NHL decides to or the NHL decides to go with, the number of teams, whoever ponies up the money. Because
that's a good point.
Figure out where Arizona is going to go or what they're going to do with Arizona. That's a possibility. But you're going to need somebody who's going to willing to put $2-3 billion down, and then put together an infrastructure. I think they're willing to go back. I think they're willing to go back to Atlanta because of the size of the city and the TV market that it brings.
Yeah, well, that's a good point.
So I don't think from all the cities I've seen, and I think the NHL does expansion drafts the best of any league to help you put a competitive team on the ice. And I think
Vegas, Seattle, look at those teams. I mean, Vegas won a Stanley Cup, and Seattle played good. Look at that.
I think the days of the NHL putting expansion draft and Ottawa winning 9 games is over. Like that was only 30 years ago. That was in 1993. And they won 9 games.
The topic of which is going to be a great conversation when we sit down with Howie Mooney to talk about his Ottawa Senators. So
yeah,
that's a tease for our episode for next week. And
as far as the hockey, they had 6,700 fans, 4-0, but a couple of fun promotions. The Kiss Cam. Dave, what's your take on that? Does it work? Is it popular? I mean, should it be every single league? Kiss Cam briefly.
Depends how much money you get for it. It's a sponsored thing.
A dentist. How much does a dentist sponsor for minor league sports?
Well, the dentist is paying part of a package. So he's getting a program ad. He's getting an in-game promotion. He's
and
getting
seats.
Tickets. Yeah, so that means that doctor is probably putting in $15,000-$18,000. So that's, remember, his name is going out there every game. It's that promotion. It's probably one of the funniest promotions that they do. For one of the teams I worked at, we had it sponsored by a radio station that had Kiss in its name. So it's the Kiss 98.5 Kiss Cam. Perfect. So they're getting money from it, and that's why they're doing it. That's why Chuck-a-Puck, all these different things, it's monetized, and that's why you do it.
Machuca Park, I mean, it's a building jackpot. I mean, and the person actually won that night, and they got $500. And the dance camp, $50 gift card. I would have done it if it was a gift certificate I wanted, but I was afraid it was gonna be something in Georgia I wasn't gonna be able to get involved with. So I would have won that easily if I wasn't so tired running around. But all in all, it was a fun experience. And then the attendance dropped the following day, where South Carolina dominated Atlanta 6-0 in front of 4,525 fans. Sunday attendance in minor league sports, it always dips. You get the church crowd that wants to go to church. Sunday attendance, it's just not, you have to have it. But what do you think? Sunday games, they good for minor league sports or not?
You have to do it, Fran.
You have to. You need to play. You have to.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking just like the American Hockey League that I worked in. The East Coast is predominantly a bus league. So you probably played at home Friday. You're like, for the Atlanta team, I bet you they probably had because of the issue of the arena, they probably had a road game Friday, road game Saturday, home game Sunday.
The thing is, people don't realize they play multiple games to save money. So they had a game Saturday and Sunday. And one fun point, I ran into some Stingray fans, and they told me 25 or 30 fans came up Friday for that lacrosse game, as well as the two hockey games. So they got their money's worth with three games at a 4.5-hour drive. I mean, that's, you come up, you get three days of sports, that's where you get your bang for your buck with this ECHL. If you're going to travel being a fan, at least you see multiple games.
Yeah, but the Stingrays have been around for 25, 30 years. They have a
93. Yep.
And they have a humongous following. They used to be the farm team for the American Hockey League team I worked for. So I'm very familiar with the franchise. So they love that team. They support it well, and they travel well. That's the fun part about minor league hockey. Because it's the bus route, people travel, they do it, and they make the most of it. They're a good group of people.
It's funny with minor league hockey. If you think about it, kind of following on what you said, nobody's ever made a movie about major league hockey. Minor league hockey, the most entertaining, to me, the most entertaining brand of hockey, but you know, like I said, they have never made a movie about the NHL, only about the minor leagues. So listen, guys, before we wrap everything up here, wanted to get your thoughts on the Hall of Fame, who got elected to the Hall of Fame. Cause I got a couple people that I got my thoughts on. I want to give, so
release the list.
Yeah. The list got out, Fran.
Can you share it? I've had a busy week writing.
All right. Well, you know what? Then I'll defer to Dave here, because the list came out and I paid attention to two names. So Dave.
Well, there is was it Dwight Freeney, Devin Hester, Andre Johnson, Julius Peppers, Steve McMichael,
Mongo Wrestling. No, we can't make that wrestling.
Randy Gradishar and Patrick Willis. That's the show.
Okay. Any thoughts on? I got thoughts on Hester, and I got thoughts on McMichael. So I want to grab those two. But the floor is yours on the other guys.
Andre Johnson. I mean, is he the wide receiver with the Texans? I believe.
Yes, he is.
Oh, good. I was thinking about Andre Reed, but that's not. He's already in the Hall of Fame. But good selections. Hester. I mean, come on. If you're going to put one guy in special teams, now that's relevant. But we'll correct that.
Yeah, let me take the Chicago guys.
Yeah,
I've got some definite thoughts. But Dave,
go ahead.
Dave, your thoughts though on who about some of those guys? Anything in particular?
I will defer to you. I will keep my comments to myself.
Okay, all right. So here's my take on a couple things. Okay, Devin Hester. It's great to see a Bear. You know, from the current, you know, from the 21st century Bear make it. I think he's him and Brian Urlacher, obviously. Brian Urlacher being the other one. Hester was a phenom in Chicago. It's one of the, it's interesting because he was a very popular player. He was kind of a jack of all trades. He was very good, very much a utility player. I mean, he was only really known for obviously, you know, making those returns. And the most memorable one I saw was against the 49ers in the wind when the 49ers were going for a long field goal, and that wind gust just brought the ball in. Hester grabbed it and ran it all the way back. That, to me, I think that was kind of the start of the legend of Devin Hester. But unfortunately, that skill returning the ball didn't translate into success elsewhere on the field because they tried him at wide receiver. He was serviceable, but it just didn't work. But it was great to see him go in the Hall of Fame as a special teams player because we've only had a couple guys go into the Hall of Fame, Ray Guy being one of them, on special teams. So that's my opinion on Devin Hester. The other one is a lot more near and dear to my heart because it's Mongo. And if anybody who's listening to this podcast, I don't even know if you guys know what's going on with Mongo, but Mongo is dying.
The health conditions are
Mongo
are
is literally on death's doorstep.
Oh, I'm glad Steve, so happy, yeah.
Steve McMichael, when I used to drive to and from work, I used to work in the southwest suburbs, and I used to live in the city. So I would always drive by his restaurant, McMichael's in Romeoville. He was also the head coach of an indoor football team called the Chicago Slaughter, larger than life. And he was kind of on that Bears defense. He was kind of even though he was larger than life, he was big into wrestling. You know, he made he did wrestling for a little bit after he retired, but he was a guy that never got as much credit as I think he deserved on that defense. So it's nice to see him get in and know about him getting in before he passes away, because the last few images I've seen come that have been posted with, it's heartbreaking with him. So I even mentioned it to my wife, because when the news came, you know, we're here and both our watches chimed at the same time. And I'm like, oh, my wife's like, who is that? I go, no. And I told her, I go, you know, he's dying of ALS. She goes,
Greg, can I ask you a personal question? Yeah.
What's that?
Does he still have a good relationship with his ex-wife Deborah, or they really hate each other? I mean, they mend fences.
I have no idea. But his current
I remember he was a true guy involved with Stone Cold Steve Austin. Yeah. And one thing I will, from the wrestling standpoint, I guarantee you a lot of wrestlers are going to be at the Hall of Fame ceremony, which might even get more people to come. Those casual, well,
those that are still alive.
Well, I mean, some of those guys, he was a Four Horsemen. Come on, that's awesome, man.
Yeah.
Ric Flair will be there, definitely doing his. Woo.
Yeah, but with McMichael, I mean, he's just a Chicago legend. So,
I know him on the wrestling side.
Yeah, it's very sad to see what's happened to him.
Bargain.
And it also goes to show you too. I mean, more, you know, there's the chances of you dying from ALS seem to be much greater if you play in the National Football League. Much like dying young, if you were a wrestler, you know, your chances of dying young.
And Greg, let me ask you one thing about the Chicago Bears, the 85 team. How come they couldn't win more than one Super Bowl? What the hell happened to them? They could have had a dynasty. That defense was awesome. Why did they just train wreck after 1 year?
Have you seen the ESPN documentary about the 85 Bears?
I mean, I saw a Super Bowl shuffle. I mean, with Gary Fenton.
The documentary. It's a whole lot of reasons, but bottom line
quarterback?
Is. No, it wasn't the quarterback, but the bottom line is you had injuries. But you also had a team that became a bunch of individuals. In the second season, they lost Buddy Ryan. And Buddy Ryan, Buddy Ryan basically was there were two head coaches of that team. And without Buddy Ryan, they weren't as good. Even though their numbers statistically were better on defense, they weren't as good. In fact, I remember I was in college watching that 86 season. Going, they're just not as aggressive as they used to be. And that was a tell. So, but yeah, there's so many reasons. And even Mike Ditka would say, you know, Mike Ditka said we should have won more. So I don't know. It's going to be, you know, it's sad, but it's nice to see him get in the Hall of Fame now before he passes away, because, I think about Ken Stabler when he got in after he passed away. I just finished up reading the book on the snake. So anyway,
one more point about the 85 Super Bowl. It's embarrassing that Walt Payton didn't get a rushing touchdown. Refrigerator Perry did. That's the guy's Hall of Famer. Yeah. Come on. I mean, Payton deserved that touchdown.
Well,
it should mean it happened.
Well, Payton, go ahead, Dave.
I mean, the next season, the team was made of individuals. Ditka did not like Walter Payton. Like, they're there was a rift there. There was tension.
Maybe that's why.
That's what I've read, and that's what I've heard, that Dicka didn't want to give Peyton that touchdown. I could be wrong, Ooh. But that's what I heard.
And like what I've heard on my end, and this is coming from Dicka, what we've seen on TV, he wasn't keeping track of who was getting what. So yeah, Peyton should have got the touchdown, but the thing is, when Peyton died, that was heartbreaking for a city. So, you know, to compare, you know, Walter Payton owned the city of Chicago. Michael Jordan, when he passes away, yeah, it'll be sad, but there will not be the outpouring of grief for a guy like MJ that there was for Walter Payton. Also considering the circumstances in which he died too. It's interesting being a Chicago fan.
And LA fan, Kobe Bryant, that's heartbreaking
Dave,
too.
Friend, Dave.
And with Walter Payton too, it wasn't his personality to say something. He wasn't going to. I mean, he played his whole career. I mean, you could probably, I bet you the majority of people have never heard him speak. Like would not know what Walter Payton's voice sounds like because he did it on the field. I mean, that's what he did. I mean, I'm approaching 50 and I played rugby I started playing rugby in the early 90s, and it's funny, but the way I learned how to play rugby was watching video of Walter Payton run. And if you ever heard him explain to you how he took contact, his main goal was, I'm going to carry the ball, I'm going to get lower than you, and I'm going to drive you up, and you're not going to tackle me. And it's amazing. If you ever, I mean, the video is probably 40 years old now of him talking about how he looked at playing football, keeping himself injury free, and how he looked at it going, I'm not letting the linebacker or the safety hit me. I'm going to hit them first. Right. And it's really, really amazing listening to him talk about how he played football.
He was a devastating hitter, and you wouldn't have expected that from a guy his size. But he was in such shape. I mean, people forget about Walter Payton is he could chuck the ball. Mm-hmm. He played emergency quarterback. One game, I forget the game. I'd have to go in Pro Football Reference to see. But there was a point in time where the Bears, this is back when the Bears had Bob Avellini, Mike Phipps, and Vince Evans. And for whatever reason, all three got knocked out of the game or weren't able to play. And he stepped in under center for at least a few plays. And, but he was just, Walter, that was, but with Mongo, I don't expect him to last a year. So it was good to see. Well, guys, hey, listen, Fran, go ahead.
Okay. One more question. The first Super Bowl you remember watching, I remember the first Super Bowl I remember watching on TV was the Bengals and the 49ers in Pontiac. That amazing goal line stance. What's your first Super Bowl you remember watching, or did you watch them all?
Dave?
My first Super Bowl I remember watching, I would say Raiders, Redskins.
Marcus Allen.
Marcus Allen's run where he came around the end and did the cut.
That was awesome.
And came up the middle. That's probably the first one I remember really sitting and watching, period.
Yeah. For me, it was Super Bowl 11.
Matchup?
Vikings versus Raiders. It wasn't much of a game, but it was more the spectacle. The next year, the spectacle and the game, obviously it was Super Bowl 12, and I was rooting for the Broncos, and there was just something the way the light of that Superdome, you know, even though it was bad for NFL films at the time doing the filming the game on TV, you know, something about, you know, back in the 70s, the way those lights shined off those helmets, just something about it. Still, you know, that's the one thing I remember about growing up in the 70s and watching NFL football. Dave, how about you? Do you remember those old games in the Texas Stadium?
Oh, yeah.
And especially, I don't know if you remember, but when the Vikings would play, because there was a period of time where the Vikings and the Cowboys were always playing for the NFC Championship, or the Rams were. It was just one of those two. But there was always something about the way and I've seen this mentioned on Facebook. Other guys have said the same thing. Yeah, just something about the way that Texas Stadium light shined off those purple helmets.
Guys on blood?
Because they came over to stadium.
Yeah, it was cool. It was cool.
I mean, if you watch TV in the 70s, you would see the opening to Dallas, and you'd see the flyover of the stadium, and they had that little small patch that you could see the field, and those lights overhang. So they were almost right above you, shining off the helmets, which you didn't have. Everywhere else was that back and coming down. So that's what it was. It's the way the stadium was set up.
Yeah, it was just so cool. You don't see that anymore. Just the aesthetics and everything. So
you don't miss that horrible AstroTurf too.
Well, that's true. I mean, for us, it was cool watching it, but the players took a pounding, obviously. Oh. So, listen, guys. On that note, let's wrap things up. And for everybody listening, thank you very much for tuning in. And next week, our plan is to be bringing in our guest Howie Mooney to talk about his up and coming latest book, which. And if you've read his first book, his first book is out of print, but we'll talk more about that first book because that was about the Ottawa Rough Riders. But his second book, whenever I see Howie's second book, I always smile because I'm the reason why the cover is the way it is. So, but we'll get into that conversation next week with Howie. So, Fran, any last words?
Absolute pleasure, guys. I love this show. I mean, this is a dream come true to do the week around the leagues, the audio version. My show, it's only going to get my column bigger and bigger. It even makes me want to work harder to find the best videos, the best news, the best analysis. And now it's going to platform where you can get the written version and the audio version with expert analysis on the big topics, not just the every little news segment. And plus, the Atlanta trip was off the hook.
And how can people find your articles?
R Sports Central. If you want, go to R Sports Central, go in the original section. You'll see 23 years of stuff. You'll find stuff that might appeal to you. Arena Football League, tons of leagues, world team tennis, a little bit of everything, because guess what? I'm not just a football guy. I stopped that about 10 years ago. So I'm happy to be doing as many sports as I can because the other bloggers, if the UFL folds, they're going to have nervous breakdowns. We'll see what happens.
Well, they'll all become CFL fans, you know,
or arena football. Arena football fans. There we go. Yeah,
there's plenty of football. There's plenty of other football besides the Spring American Football Outdoor brand. And for everybody looking to reach out to the show, Dave, myself, or Fran, you can go. Really, the best bet is, and as we kind of found out this week, the best bet for you to get in contact with us is through our Twitter account at From the 55. You can follow the show. You can message us right there. With that said, though, if you're going to message us and you can be critical, which we actually, I appreciate. I appreciate when people, you know, say, hey, you know, you got it. I do appreciate that. But, you know, we speak our minds. We speak our opinion. Listen, if you're a news or, you know, if you're one of these many, many, how do I want to say? Let me gather my thought. If you're one of these many sites, news hub type sites that is covering spring football and you don't really like our hot take, or you know what? That's great. Disagree with us all you want, but please, if you're going to write us, sign your name, because I can't, it's hard for me to respond if I don't know who the hell I'm talking to, because I'm just at this point assuming, hey, if you're reaching out to me from an organization that's been known to use bots to write articles, I kind of got to think I'm replying to a bot here. So, by all means,
one thing I'll say,
let me finish. So if you're going to reply, if you're going to hit us up, hey, leave your name and share some of your articles with us. So, you know, we can prove us wrong, prove, you know, educate us, help educate us so we can be better at doing our job. And in turn, hey, you know, we'll, you know, try to learn. So we will sign off here and we will be back next week. And like I said, we're going to be talking with Howie Mooney and, but yeah, no, feel free to message us with any comments, questions, critiques, what have you. I'm in charge of all replies. So listen, I appreciate your input. And, you know, if we say something that might offend you, well, I'm going to apologize in advance. But bottom line is, we're kind of all in this together. We all love sports and everything. But if you're a reporter out there, you're a blogger or something, our suggestion, and the three of us have talked about this, please just be good journalists, ask hard questions. Don't be doing what I saw in national security circles with intelligence reports, doing what we call circular reporting. Be original, write a story, and if you've got an opinion, and you know, back it up with facts. That's all we ask. So listen, on that note, thank you very much for listening, and hopefully you'll tune in again after that diatribe on my part. But until then, this is Greg with Dave and Fran signing off, and we will be talking to you next week. Like I said, we got Howie Mooney coming on to talk about his book, upcoming book, and we're going to be talking all things Canada. So get back to the roots of the show. So thank you very much. Again, lastly, thank you very much for tuning in, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
This is Ralph Guillaume of the Washington Redskins introducing Hail to the Redskins.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Hello, football friends. This is Darren Hayes of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, and I'd like to invite you to the portal of positive football history, Pigskin Dispatch and PigskinDispatch.com. We talk about everything that centers around the game of American football, expert discussions, the origins of the games, the great players, teams, and coaches, and more, as some great guests and insights from experts. We have new episodes 3 to 4 times a week, and you can find us on SportsHistoryNetwork.com, PigskinDispatch.com, or your favorite podcast provider.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.